outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see. Open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Monday, February the 9th, 2026, year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles, the Man of Steel, and you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you are all doing well, those of you of goodwill. As we say often on this program, we don't wish our enemies well, folks, not when our enemies have one reason for living, which is destroying us. Okay, when that is their primary reason for existing on this planet, that they have sworn themselves to our destruction, of course we don't wish them success, folks. We don't say, God bless you in your mission to slit our throats. Okay, we pray for their absolute defeat, that all of their energies, all of their efforts go up in smoke instead of us going up in smoke. We have to point that out, folks, because unfortunately, a large part of the reason that we're in the mess that we're in right now is because people have misappropriated and misunderstood a lot involving this person who features very prominently on this program. And I'm not talking about Benjamin Netanyahu, folks. I'm talking about his nemesis, Jesus Christ. A lot of it has been misunderstood, folks, and this is a large part of the reason why we're in the pickle that we find ourselves in these days, is because everybody has looked at Jesus as, you know, some kind of a Middle Eastern hippie, you know, sugar and spice and everything nice, instead of seeing him as the first century equivalent of Palestine's William Wallace, meaning Braveheart. Jesus was a fighter, folks. He was. Yes, he had a lot of nice things to say. He was full of compassion, but he was also full of indignation and contempt for what were the evils of his day. And his compassion manifested itself in warning all of us, all future generations, about the danger that we faced as a result of this one particularly problematic group of people. Okay? And, you know, Jesus was a fighter. He was a warrior, folks. Yes, he chose to fight his battles with words and with ideas. But make no mistake about it, folks, when he picked up the whip and he started violently driving the Jews out of the temple, you know, they never give us a definitive description of what was going on in the temple. But I have my own ideas and my own theory about that, folks, especially now with all of this Epstein business going on. I think that they were buying and selling little children for sexual purposes back then. Okay. Do I have any proof of this based upon what is written in the Gospels? The only piece of proof, if you want to call it that, is when Jesus was talking about how those who would harm a child should have a stone tied around their neck and they should be thrown into the sea, meaning they should receive the death penalty, okay? Jesus obviously loved little children. And so, you know, today, in 2026 AD, when we look at this Epstein thing and we look at the Jews' involvement in trafficking women and children, Gentile women and children, the fact that their religion going all the way back to the books of Exodus, Genesis, Exodus, Deuteronomy, Leviticus, Numbers, you know, buying and selling Gentile women and children for sexual purposes is all over the Old Testament, folks. All over the Old Testament. It's not a Talmud thing. And so, folks, what I'm saying here is that we need to recalibrate our understanding of who Jesus Christ was and exactly what he was trying to accomplish with his rabble-rousing. Okay, the world as it exists today is exactly the kind of world that he did not want to see materialize. And in large part, this has happened because people have misunderstood. Yes, he was the Prince of Peace, but he also said, I have not come to bring peace, but the sword. Come to divide a son from his father and a daughter from her mother. Okay, good and evil, folks, good and evil. And there couldn't be a better time for having this conversation than now, folks, because as we discuss often on this program, you know, we are literally on the razor's edge between the world as we know it now and the world as the Jews have been planning for the last 3,000 years. Okay, their kingdom here on earth. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in Hades. Not in heaven, but in Hades, folks, meaning hell. And there's one man trying to prevent this, folks, to put an end to all of it. And just like Jesus, and please don't anybody bombard me with a bunch of emails, how dare you compare Donald Trump to Jesus. I'm not comparing him to Jesus. What I'm saying is that people are misunderstood often, especially when they are at the center of a very controversial thing. They are misunderstood. They are the victim of all sorts of campaigns of slander and libel. And they're doing the same thing with Donald Trump. And unfortunately, folks, a great deal of people who consider themselves America first, who consider themselves Christians, who consider themselves anti-Zionist and anti-Israel and anti-war, they're jumping on the bandwagon. Now, why am I bringing this up again, folks? Well, again, you know, I talk about things that obviously are important and in the news, and I also talk about things where I get emails from people with questions and comments. And sometimes I get some really goofy questions and comments, and it's obvious from the person sending it that they haven't put the pieces of this puzzle together in a way that makes sense. Okay, it looks like a Picasso painting. And so they say, well, what about this and what about that? And as if I hadn't already described this and discovered this and all of the rest of that a million times before, I have to explain it again. Now, part of the reason that we're starting the program off on this theme, folks, I had the occasion yesterday of listening to an extremely interesting broadcast that Tucker Carlson put together. And it was in two parts. The first part, he was interviewing, I believe it was the Lutheran Archbishop of Jerusalem, which was a very interesting article where this Palestinian Lutheran Archbishop was talking about what it means to be a Christian in the Holy Land. And the second part of it, he interviewed, I will confess, folks, I don't know who this man was. Very interesting. He was a Jordanian or Palestinian who was a Christian, and he went to great lengths in talking about the religion of Islam and how Jesus and Mary are viewed by Muslims, how they're described in the Muslims' holy book, the Quran. And literally, folks, word for word, almost word for word, everything that he was saying as a Christian now, as a Christian, who was saying that Christianity and Islam, you know, maybe they're not identical twins, obviously not, but they are close enough in their spiritual DNA that we can say that they're from the same family. very, very close siblings, if not siblings, then very, very close cousins, and that there's no reason for any Christian to believe any of the lies that have been taught and told about the Muslims and about Islam since 9/11. Now, the reason that I found this very interesting but also very maddening, folks, is that nothing that the guest who was being interviewed by Tucker Carlson was news to me. This was all stuff that I had studied and came to understand a quarter of a century ago, right after 9/11, and that I spent and have spent a great deal of my life and my quote-unquote career as a writer and as a speaker trying to make other people, mostly Christians, understand as well. And to a large extent, folks, it's been very unsuccessful. 25 years ago when I could see my fellow Christians falling, going down this road that the Jews had paved for them. Islam is this, and Islam is that, and Muslims believe this, and they believe that, and they want to cut our heads off. And I'm telling them, don't go, this is not true, don't go down this road, okay? The people who are telling you this are lying to you, okay? It's part of their strategy, a very important part of their strategy, that they get you to believe these lies about the Muslims, so that you will go over there and you will fight them and World War III will get started. To a large extent, folks, it was a waste of time. Nobody wanted to listen to that. They said, no, I believe what my eyes tell me. I see what happened on 9/11, and I read these news stories, and it's obvious that the Muslims are out to destroy all of us. Well, now, Tucker Carlson, who was one of those people who believed that, folks, he really did believe that Arabs hijacked planes on 9/11, and that any talk of Israel's involvement in it was just nonsense, and that Islam was an extremist religion and that they hated Christians. And now, 25 years later, an entire quarter of a century later, Tucker Carlson, you know, he's had his Saul on the road to Damascus moment, where he has realized how much on the wrong side of many issues he was, and the damage that he did. I'm blaming you, Mr. Carlson, in the very unlikely event that you're listening to the program. We celebrate the fact that the scales have fallen from your eyes. But nevertheless, a great deal of damage was done by that group of people who some of whom peddled lies knowing that they were lies, and some of whom peddled lies thinking that they were the truth. Okay, obviously Tucker Carlson falling into the latter category. He believed what he was telling people, that Arabs had done 9/11 and Islam was this and Islam was that, whereas people like Bill Kristol, who used to be Tucker Carlson's boss, he knew that these things were lies. Now, how does this all fit in with today? Well, folks, we have a repeat performance taking place, but instead of it being the lies about Islam, it's the lies about Donald Trump, President Trump, okay? And just as much as it is proving more and more on a daily basis to be a waste of time, to try and to get people to understand, look, the same people who are telling you that Donald Trump is out to start World War III, the same people who are telling you that Donald Trump is owned by the Jewish lobby, are the same people who were telling you 25 years ago that Islam is this and Islam is that, and the Muslims are out to kill us, and Israel's our greatest ally, and all the rest of it, okay? Same people, different lies, and for the same general strategy. Okay, they have to get Trump out of office, or at the very least, they have to tie his hands to the point where he cannot move forward with his plans of yanking the fuse out of this apocalyptic bomb known as World War III. Now, the reason why we're talking about this today, folks, is because at the very moment that we are doing this program, powerful Jews all over the world, but especially in Tel Aviv, in Jerusalem, in New York, Washington, D.C., they are livid. Just smoke coming out of their ears, out of their nostrils, and everything else over the fact that President Trump has not launched the kind of apocalyptic genocidal war against Iran that the Jews have been planning now for the last 3,000 years. Instead, he has his negotiators, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, negotiating with the Iranians and working in close consultation with the Saudis and the Qataris and others. And they're trying to come up with this alternative to what it is that Benjamin Netanyahu and the rest of these terrorist Jews are planning to do. Now, what's interesting about this, folks, if you read the news, and we will be touching on the news here in a bit, if you read the news, you know the Jews are really in a situation here, okay, because they're really nervous about the fact that the president seems to be making some progress in negotiating with the Iranians, okay? And they're saying, well, what about, you know, what about the military strikes? This isn't good enough. Well, remember, folks, just about, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, the news was, oh, Israel's so worried that the president's going to launch military strikes against Iran. Netanyahu's personally worried that this is going to happen. Well, folks, we here at this podcast, at this humble little informational endeavor, immediately cried BS on this. We said, no, that's BS, okay? Netanyahu's not worried about the president launching military strikes against Iran. This is an act. He's lying. He's doing this in order to make it appear as though he's not the warlike one, that Trump is the one who wants to start World War III. Well, lo and behold, folks, Netanyahu is on his way to the United States. He was supposed to be here in another 2 weeks, but he has decided to cut that time frame short and to get here immediately, PDQ, in order to meet with the president and to try and throttle him over what the president is doing with the Iranians in trying to avoid war. Now, folks, why are we having this discussion? Because depending on where you go, whose website you visit, whose podcast you tap into, you're probably going to run into some version of Trump is owned by Netanyahu, he's out to start World War III, everything he's doing with the negotiations is just an act. He really doesn't want to negotiate away. He wants to destroy Iran, blah, 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 the Tower of Babel, folks. And there's one podcast, there's one website on the entire freaking planet that's saying, no, that's not it. That's not what's going on. The president really, really, really wants to come up with something other than war. And that's why he's got Witkoff there. That's why he's got Kushner there. No, this isn't just an act. It's not just political theater. That's what a lot of these people, they like to use terms like that when, you know, and my personal experience in dealing with people who use that term, political theater, I always found out that after talking to them a little bit that they really weren't that smart, that they had heard somebody else use that term in another discussion and they thought it would make them sound smart if they used it. And unfortunately, this is what is prevailing all across the blabosphere. And in the meantime, political pressure is being put on the president, saying that he has abandoned MAGA, he has abandoned his America First policy. And if these people would just use their brains for 5 minutes and consider the fact that there is no better America First policy that the president of the United States could be busy involving himself with than preventing World War III that certainly would drag the United States in. Anyway, folks, I realize that was kind of an extended and elongated introduction to today's program. We are joined once again by the invaluable and irreplaceable Stas, friend of humanity, and we're going to be tapping into his fertile intelligence in decoding all of this. Stas, you just heard my rather elongated introduction to today's discussion. What do you think?
Yes, let me add to that the best I can. So recently somebody just told me they were, you know, that they were, you know, starting to not trust Donald J. Trump. He's taken money. I'm like, you mean from like Adelson, right? Like these things say. So I told him, well, what has he gotten back in exchange for what you're saying? What's coming into him? Has he done anything for them? We haven't gone into Iran. And who's taken pressure off? He hasn't attacked Iran yet at all. He basically got out of the Venezuela thing as smooth as possible.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't engaged in any new conflicts. And if you'll notice, the powerful European states, Germany, the EU, France, and the rest of them, have not gotten off his back.
Mm-hmm.
They're still pressuring him to involve themselves in Ukraine. They've mm-hmm. certainly caved. They can't seem to do anything for themselves. They've dedicated their entire economies. They're crashing due to their endless support for this Ukraine war.
Mm-hmm.
So what has he gotten? If he's a sellout, what has the president got in return? Have the media backed off on him? Has anybody backed on him? No way. Pressure is greater than ever on
mm-hmm.
President Donald J. Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They continue to inflame. And if people don't think they could do this, I think if they wanted to, they could turn on a dime and start to say, you know, the president has done the right thing with this. And that. I don't know, however they do it.
They did it. Just think back to 9/11. And how the media in the run up to 9/11 during the election, you know, George Bush was, and folks, believe me, we're not running to George Bush's defense. Okay, I think I can speak for Stas in saying that we both consider him to be, one heartbeat above primate level. Primates are monkeys, by the way. Okay, but nevertheless, during the election season between him and Gore, obviously the media favored Gore. And they were running Bush through the ringer. And then, of course, the whole fiasco with the elections and how they were saying Bush stole it. But then 9/11 happened, and suddenly George W. Bush turned into George Washington. Thank God he's president when this happened. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
what Stas is saying here is exactly true. Anytime Netanyahu wanted, he would have his people call up the Washington Post and the New York Times and all of these other papers and speak to their editors and say, treat this guy not with kid gloves, but with candy gloves. Okay, he's our boy now. So we want you to lay off, take the pressure off of him. And they're not doing it, folks. They're not doing it. Now, again, and I'm sorry to have to interrupt you, Stas, but this is just like basic political physics, folks, okay? If Trump were Netanyahu's slave, if he were the slave of Miriam Adelson, if he were the slave of Israel, if he were the, you know, all four of the horsemen, four horsemen of the apocalypse, and was out to start World War III, then why is he doing things that the Jews don't want? Netanyahu's fat rear end is about to get on a plane and come over here in order to have an urgent, that's the term that was used in the story that we ran today. In fact, I'm going to read the title of it. Netanyahu rushes to Washington for, quote, urgent talks with the President of the United States concerning Iran. Okay. He wouldn't be doing this, folks, if Trump were his boy and if Trump were towing the line. Would you agree with that, Stas?
Absolutely. You bring up a great point there. They were poking fun at Colin Bush Jr. Then the 9/11 happened. The whole country was patriotic. And then they put him in again. This is way different. They were doing everything they can to get rid of Trump. I mean, they hit the country with COVID. The place had a lockdown. He's only been in like 1 year, or not even a year. We had the drone experience. That was bizarre. We had them almost take down the government with the signal gate. We've had Mr. Trump keep us out of a lot of war engagements with tremendous pressure on him to do it.
Stas, yep. He bombed Iran. So doesn't that show that he wanted to start World War III and that he did this in order to make Netanyahu and Miriam Adelson happy?
They were going to, and now we're referencing Mr. Kerriakou's evidence that he was threatened, that they were going to... The Israelis use nuclear weapons on Iran. He tells them to evacuate, which why would he tell them to evacuate if he was owned by Marion Adelson? He would just waste as many people as he could to get them off his back.
Yep.
I'd hate to say it in such cruel terms. Of course he would have.
He would be the new, I don't know, he would be just the bell of the ball if he helped them in incinerating, mass murdering 15 million Iranians. Okay.
Yes.
So, that's something to keep in mind, folks. As you start listening to these talking heads saying, well, he bombed Iran, he bombed the nuclear. It was the lesser of two evils. What do you mean, lesser of two evils? Because according to former CIA field officer, career CIA officer, John Kerriakou, the word on the street in the CIA and in the American intelligence community is that Israel was threatening to use nuclear weapons. So, for the president, it's a simple choice. Okay, bomb the nuclear facilities so that Netanyahu doesn't have that excuse anymore, or so he thought. And in the process, save 15 million, the lives of 15 million innocent people.
Yes. Sorry.
It's all right.
Before I forget, as evidence that I think he coordinated that attack with Iran. Iran knows that people in the Pentagon want to kill them. They know the pressure on Donald Trump. I think he's got a good back channel with them. Otherwise, we'd be the end of the world. Also, I just wanted to say quickly, they did a limp-wristed phony attack response on us with their hypersonic missiles. So they're coordinating. It's definitely seems to me that Iran is aware of the pressure from State of Israel on President Donald J. Trump, and they know that there are plenty of lunatics in the Pentagon that want to attack them, and they know that they don't like Trump either. They know they've got these war firsters that are angry at President Trump that he doesn't even send more aid to Ukraine and that he hasn't already engaged in war with Iran. There's just plenty of crazies, plenty of Dick Cheney-like guys.
Yes.
And I think they coordinated that beautifully. You know, did the Iranian government like it? No. They have a right to have a nuclear power plant. I dare say they have a right to
nuclear weapons.
To nuclear weapons.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. They have absolutely every right to do that. Do I want them to do it? No. I want to see nuclear weapons, nuclear energy, and maybe I sound ignorant by saying this, but I just don't believe, I don't trust it. I think it's too dangerous. But yeah, given the realities of the world today and the fact that you've got this one group of psychopaths, religious psychopaths, who've been fantasizing about destroying Persia for the last 2,500 years. Yeah, they have the right to arm themselves with nuclear weapons.
Yes, absolutely. Case
Let's
in point,
play
you
a soundbite.
North Korea all the time, and nobody goes in there. I'll just leave you with that. Sorry.
That's all right. No, yep. Pick it up on the other side. We're going to listen to a soundbite here, folks. A very important soundbite. This is 20 years ago, folks. Now, the reason that I'm playing it is because, again, people are not they have not, and they still refuse to study the person and the personality of Donald Trump. Okay, they do not have a working profile of who he is and his core beliefs. And, you know, we have gone to great lengths on this program, on the website, of pointing these things out, just as we did 25 years ago when we were trying to inoculate the Christian mind away from the poison that the Jews were pouring into it over what Islam was and what it says in the Quran and all the rest of that, okay? And we would cite, you know, sections from the Quran. Look, the Jews are lying to you. They are lying to you. And likewise, folks, now, does this mean that all of the alternative media people are willingly working for Netanyahu and Israel's disinformation campaign? No, they genuinely believe, just like Tucker Carlson did 25 years ago, they believe in what they're saying. They believe that Trump really is prisoner to Netanyahu and to the Jewish lobby, okay? But if you bother to do a little bit of research, folks, and a little bit of independent and rational thinking, you'll find out that the real Donald Trump is the Donald Trump that you're going to hear right now.
Give us your assessment. Is there a way out?
The war is a total disaster. It's a catastrophe, nothing less. It is such a shame that this took place. In fact, I gained a lot of respect for our current president's father by the fact that he had the sense not to go into Iraq. He won the war and then said, let's not go the rest of the way, and he turned out to be right. And Saddam Hussein, whether they like him or didn't like him, he hated terrorists. He'd shoot and kill terrorists. When terrorists came into this country, which he did control and he did dominate, he would kill terrorists. Now it's a breeding ground for terrorists. So, look, the war is a total catastrophe.
Who do you blame?
And they have a civil war going on.
Who do you blame?
Well, there's only one person you can blame, and that's our current president. I mean, obviously, Rumsfeld was a disaster, and other people that are giving him advice have been a disaster. And Condoleezza Rice was a lovely woman, but she never makes a deal. She doesn't make deals. She waves. She gets off the plane. She waves. She sits down with some dictator, 45-degree angle. They do the camera shot. She waves again. She gets back on the plane. She waves. No deal ever happens. So, I mean,
you got to close a deal at some point.
You got to make deals. The world is dying to make deals, and we don't have the right people doing it.
The Vice President Dick Cheney.
Well, he's obviously a very hawkish guy on the war. He said the war was going fantastically just a few months ago, and, you know, it's just very sad. I don't know if they're bad people. I don't know what's going on. I just know that they got us into a mess, the likes of which this country has probably never seen. It's one of the great catastrophes of all time, and perhaps even worse, the rest of the world hates us. You go throughout Europe. I travel. I do deals all over the world. The Europeans hate us. You go to Germany. You go to England. You go to places that, you know, we didn't have problems with. They all hate the Americans because of what's happened. We had a chance after September 11th to be the most popular, for the first time ever, to be the most popular nation on earth, and we blew it. Everybody, for the first time, people felt sympathy. I'm not saying it's a great thing to have sympathy in terms of yourself, but for the first time, they felt a sympathy and a love for this country because of what happened. And we blew it.
How does the United States get out of this situation? Is there a way out of it?
You know how they get out? They get out. That's how they get out. Declare victory and leave. Because I'll tell you, this country is just going to get further bogged down. They're in a civil war over there, Wolf. There's nothing that we're going to be able to do with a civil war. They are in a major civil war, and it's going to go to Iran, and it's going to go to other countries. They are in the midst of a major civil war, and there's nothing. And by the way, we're keeping the lid on a little bit, but the day we leave anyway, it's all going to blow up. And Saddam Hussein will be a nice person. compared to the man, and it will be a man, it will not be a woman, that we understand. People say, oh, gee, you didn't give the women a chance. It will be a man. Compared to the person that takes over for Saddam Hussein, he will be considered a nice person. This guy will be the meanest, the worst guy, and he'll have one thing. He will hate America, and he'll use that to flame. So, I mean, this is a total catastrophe, and you might as well get out now because you're just wasting time. And lives. You know, nobody talks about the soldiers that are coming back with no arms and no legs. And I saw at Mar-a-Lago on Mondays, I make Mar-a-Lago my club that you know about.
In Palm Beach.
I make that twice now. On a Monday, I let returning Iraqi injured soldiers come to the premises. The most beautiful people I've ever seen, but they're missing arms and legs. They're with their wives. Sometimes they're with their girlfriends. And the tears are coming down the faces of these people. I mean, the thousands and maybe hundreds of thousands, and the Iraqis that have been just maimed and killed. This war is a horrible thing. Now, President Bush says he's religious, and yet 400,000 people, the way I count it, have died, and probably millions have been badly maimed and injured. What's going on? What's going on? And the day we pull out, it's going to explode. We're keeping the lid on a little bit. It's still a catastrophe. But the day we pull out, because they're in a civil war, whether we want to admit it or not, they're in a civil war.
What do you think of some of these scandals that are unfolding in Washington right now? As we speak, the Attorney General is under fire, Alberto Gonzalez. What do you make of this as an executive trying to watch an administration?
Look, everything in Washington has been a lie. Weapons of mass destruction was a total lie. It was a way of attacking Iraq, which he thought was going to be easy, and it turned out to be the exact opposite of easy. He reads 60 books a year. He reads a book a week. Do you think the president reads a book a week? I don't think so. He doesn't watch television. Now, one thing I know is that when I'm on television, I watch, or I try. Because you do. Your own ego says, you know, let's watch. Let's see whether it's good or bad. You want to watch, right? He doesn't watch television. So he's on television being interviewed by you or somebody else. He doesn't watch. Does anybody really believe that? Now they're doing this whole scandal with the U.S. attorneys. Now they're finding emails. And it's proven to be a lie. Everything's a lie. It's all a big lie.
Okay, folks. So that was Donald J. Trump, American citizen, private American citizen and businessman, 20 plus years ago. You can hear the passion and the emotion in his voice, folks. He's not faking it. He's not finding something, you know, an axe to grind so that he can get on TV because he's full of himself and he's a narcissist and all the other crap that people say about him. Okay, you can hear it in his voice that the entire thing that happened after 9/11 was a total disaster, a total catastrophe. Now, folks, I want you to imagine that you're Benjamin Netanyahu, or you are Ariel Sharon, or you are any of the top-level people at AIPAC, at any of the big Jewish organizations, that you're Sheldon Adelson or his wife, and you're listening to this man, Donald Trump, speaking this way. And then all of a sudden, in 2015, this guy, and by the way, folks, this isn't the only time that he said things like this, okay? During the campaign in 2016, he singled out Jeb Bush, and he said, you know, your father lied to the country, lied to us about weapons of mass destruction. There were no weapons of mass destruction. Okay, so you're any of these powerful Jewish groups or leaders of Jewish groups or politicians like Netanyahu, and you're listening to this man, Donald Trump, talk like this, what are you saying to yourself? Stas, what are they saying among themselves back in 2006 when Donald Trump is making statements like this? What are they all saying about amongst themselves about him?
We don't want this guy to get in for president.
No. We got to make sure that we throw everything but the kitchen sink in his path so that he does not get into the presidency. Now, folks, this should be the ultimate no-brainer. We shouldn't even have to spend 3 seconds of our time talking about this. But the reason that we have to spend that 3 seconds and more talking about it is because these really, really basic, simple to understand facts somehow escape the attention of really, really, well, some really smart people out there on their podcasts and on their interviews who say Trump is going to take us into war. And again, I have to rely on my evil twin here, Stas, to fill in the blanks for me, because like I said, folks, I don't listen to things. Tucker Carlson's the only one that I listen to, sometimes Glenn Greenwald. But I can see the titles on a lot of these YouTube videos, and if the titles are indicative of what's taking place in these podcasts, then they're all saying the same thing, and it's just a lot of crap. Stas, your take on this?
They've all the so-called pundits have all blown by, and they've all just settled on that Trump is with the capitalist class, that he's sold out to Israel. I don't know why they're not taking a look at any details. I guess it's just not profitable to.
It's not. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. You start talking like the us, and then you start sounding like us, and now all of a sudden, the big donors that you have that are keeping your podcast and your website afloat, sending you $1,000, $5,000 a month, whatever, and they say, oh, no, you've sold out. You've sold out, and now I'm going to give my money to somebody else. That's how it works, folks. That is exactly how it works. Not all of these people can be this dumb, that they can't put these simple pieces of this puzzle in the right place and coming up with the right answer to this. Sorry to interrupt you, Stas. Go ahead.
I mean, they haven't. Then why is Prime Minister Netanyahu rushing to the White House to stop the Rand deal right now?
Well,
why
no,
would he bother?
Because it's not really Netanyahu. It's really not Netanyahu. Remember?
He's been replaced by a white hat. I forgot.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry, folks. We had to do that. There's actually a reason for us doing that, folks, which is to point out just how, pardon the French here, folks, how effed up everything is, that we have to go out there and try and rebuke and debunk these notions, such as everybody's been replaced. Netanyahu, it's his double. Miriam Adelson, it's her double. Let's see, what else? I mean, the one thing that I will go with, folks, and I've said this from the very beginning, is that Jeffrey Epstein is probably still alive. Okay? Why is he still alive, folks? Because Donald Trump and his people knew that Netanyahu and his people were looking to kill Epstein and to take him out, because Epstein was being bled of information by Trump and by the U.S. intelligence community in order to bring down MEGA. Stas, explain to our readers what MEGA is.
MEGA is the code name for the very highly placed Mossad asset in the White House at the top levels.
Mm-hmm.
According to Gordon Thomas
in his book
Gideon Spies,
exactly.
So this has been huge. Everybody has suspected
going all the way back to Clinton, going all the way back to the very well, at least as far as we know, to Clinton, but much sooner than that, folks. MEGA. This is not it's not MAGA, but we can say that the war that's going on right now is a war between MAGA and MEGA, okay?
Right, exactly.
Because Donald Trump, as we have said before, has been part of the U.S. intelligence community throughout his entire adult life. In fact, folks, I want to toss this in right now and give a congratulatory shout-out to one of the listeners of the program who pointed out to me Melania Trump, the president's wife. Remember, folks, she started off as a model. Okay? So it is in somewhere between entirely possible and entirely probable that she was one of these women who was trafficked by Epstein, and Trump found her in the midst of his work with the U.S. intelligence community. Okay, I hadn't even thought. In fact, I'll just tell you right now, I'm green with envy, folks, that somebody else came up with that idea before I did. But yes, I think it is entirely think about it, folks, in a couple of instances where some writer had mentioned, you know, had paired Melania up with Epstein. Stas, what was the president's response to that on the few occasions that that happened?
I mean, like in photographs of Melania and the president?
Well, when insinuations were made that somehow Melania was involved in some dirty business with Epstein, the way that Ghislaine Maxwell was, what was Trump's response to that?
I'm not sure. I would imagine he's very angry.
Oh, he sued them for doing that. So there is something where there's smoke, there's fire, folks. And there's something there about Melania and Epstein. And so, again, folks, it is MAGA versus MEGA. I know we're kind of getting off topic here, but let's just bring this thing, swing this thing back around to where things are. The day after tomorrow, Netanyahu, and by the way, folks, have you noticed how big his ears are getting? This is something else that one of the listeners pointed out to me. His ears are getting bigger and bigger. Now, look, none of us age gracefully except for my beautiful wife who just – I can't figure it out. She's just got good DNA. None of us age gracefully, but Netanyahu, there's something going on with his ears. You know, I mean, it's like the reptile DNA in him is just screaming to get out. Pay attention to it. His ears are getting huge, folks. I think that the lizard underneath the skin, alligator underneath the skin is beginning to come out. But anyway, on a more serious note, folks, Netanyahu is coming to D.C. Why does he need to do this? Why did Witkoff and Kushner, this is something else, and Stas is going to answer the question for us, or he's going to, yeah, answer the question. Right after they left meeting with Netanyahu, they went and they visited the aircraft carrier that is stationed in the region that is commanded by Admiral Bradley Cooper, who is the head of Central Command. Okay? Why did they go and meet with him personally, Stas? Why did Kushner and Witkoff go and meet with the head of CENTCOM personally on this aircraft carrier?
I'm not sure about that, but I know right now the headlines are saying Netanyahu is rushing to the White House to stop any Iran deal. He knows that Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff, special envoy, were meeting with them, and he's demanding that any agreement includes limitations on what Tehran has for ballistic missiles and more. This feeds into it that it is impossible that Trump is, a slave of President Netanyahu if this type of activity is happening. But everybody's just thinks it's some sort of theater that he's, you know, rushing back. He's clearly upset by the efforts of Donald J. Trump and Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff. Originally, in his first term, his detractors said that Donald J. Trump was controlled by Jared Kushner. But we've got Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff pressing for peace in this situation, and Netanyahu won't have it, so he's rushing to D.C. This is, I think, his 10th trip already. So why would he have to do 10 trips? Are they doing it because Mr. Trump and Mr. Netanyahu have to do all these crazy moves because of the hypersonic missiles?
And bricks. And the Global South.
Yeah, and the Global South. I mean, there's a lot of shows that, you know, that are saying that, you know, Israel is on its knees because of the hypersonic missiles. When they virtually blew up the entire Middle East with the beepers and all these crazy tricks. It's not, I mean, they're, and threatened our president, by the way, not to go crazy here in circles,
mm-hmm.
which nobody cared about that. Here, they just blew up a bunch of guys with the beeper. They give the president a beeper. That's nothing. Everything is glossed over. That's a trick. I mean, why would they have to do all this many tricks? I don't know. I mean,
okay. Well, Stas. Let me play devil's advocate here. Okay, if Trump does not intend to bomb the hell out of Iran, then why all of the military assets? You know, this huge naval presence in the region. Why have all of those? All of that firepower concentrated in one place.
Although it's troubling, I personally think it's to keep the IDF for completely going
absolutely.
In there to ruin
absolutely.
Trump's efforts again.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
yeah, and as we said on the last program, because Trump knows that there are Israeli spies in Iran who are sitting on missiles, they're sitting on drones, all kinds of things that can be used in carrying out a false flag attack. And he wants these things shot down. At the very least, he wants the presence there in order to tell Netanyahu, don't even think about it. Now, I'm going to give you one more chance, Stas. I'm sorry, I do this to you all the time. Given the fact that Kushner and Witkoff just left meeting after meeting Netanyahu, and according to the news reports coming out of Israel, folks, the reason that Netanyahu has decided to make this urgent, rushed meeting with Trump is because of the meetings that he had with Kushner and Witkoff. Okay, so Netanyahu meets with Kushner and Witkoff. They tell him something, and Netanyahu cuts his plans short and says, I'm going to Washington. Okay, I got to have a face-to-face with the president. Then Kushner and Witkoff go and they go to meet with the head of CENTCOM face-to-face. Why, Stas? Why Kushner and Witkoff? Folks, it was enough of a news item that it was in all of the major Israeli news outlets, the fact that Kushner and Witkoff went to the aircraft carrier, I think it's the Abraham Lincoln, that is the flagship for CENTCOM, to meet personally with the head of CENTCOM. I'll answer your question, Stas. Because they know they can't communicate over any open lines, okay, because the Israelis are listening to everything. And whatever it is that Witkoff and Kushner, that whatever message that they're bringing to Admiral Cooper with regards to possible military action to shoot down Israeli planes, Israeli missiles, false flag drone attacks, whatever, it's something of such a sensitive nature that it could only be done face to face, just like the meeting between the Secretary of War Hegseth and the 800 top US military commanders back in September. Okay, so folks, there is something big brewing, okay? Yes, we have been defending the president, I think for good reason, because I think that we have the proper posture, the proper understanding on all of this, but it doesn't mean that we're out of the woods, okay? Again, as we try to point out on this program, we're dealing with a completely irrational element here, okay? You know, in Stephen King's novel, The Stand, okay, it's a very good book, by the way, folks. If you have a month of leisure time to read it, you should. There's a character in it. His name is the Trash Can Man, and he's a pyromaniac. He just loves to burn things. He's been burning things ever since he was a little kid, and he just loves fire. He loves burning things. He loves blowing things up. I don't necessarily think that Stephen King meant to make this comparison, but in effect, this is the
the Jewish character, folks. This is the Jewish brain. Jewish brain loves burning things. Remember, up until the Romans went in and destroyed the temple, this was the means by which the Jews stayed in good stead with their with the violent deity that they worship, Yahweh, which was taking these animals and burning them to where nothing was left. Okay. So this is what we're dealing with here. We are dealing with honestly, folks, I don't want to sound like a soothsayer of doom, but every time we do a program, every time I post a new article on the website, I always take into account, make sure that you get everything right here, because this might be the last time that you're able to communicate with the readership and the listenership, because that's how close to the wire everything is right now. Stas, your thoughts?
One point that I will make, I hope this is useful. Steve Witkoff, the so-called special envoy, always gives Netanyahu a hard time. If Donald Trump was owned, and this is becoming a crucial thing, and unfortunately we have to talk about it on every podcast, the fact that that Donald J. Trump is not owned by the Adelson woman. And that proof, one item of proof is that Steve Witkoff, special envoy, hasn't been fired.
Mm-hmm.
This guy goes in, they try to say it's the Sabbath, Mr. Netanyahu can't meet with you, and Witkoff used expletives, he goes, I'm talking to him.
Yeah.
He's proof that certainly every Jewish person isn't a bad person. This guy is a big shot in his own right, and he's taken up his whole life trying to do this. Why is he doing it? Because the guy knows how serious this is. We're in the brink of annihilation.
Yeah.
Steve Witkoff could have went in, did some stuff for Trump, and quit. He's a billionaire. He could make himself famous, write books, and brag about how he did everything great without risking his life and career and stressing himself out by continuing to go. Because this guy knows.
He knows.
How bad it is. How bad it is. And Jared Kushner, yes, the Kushners are trouble. And I'm sure Donald Trump, the president, doesn't really like that he's his son-in-law. But this guy, Jared Kushner, also knows how dangerous this is. Yes, he's a friend of Netanyahu. But he's in there. He is also married to the incredible, beautiful Ivanka Trump. I have to assume he loves her, and he doesn't want the world to end. And he would like to do this. So, of course, that's Trump's complicated style. You've got Marco Rubio, a bad guy, looming in the background. He's pressing to, more pressure on Iran. But this is what the president has to do. He has to make it look good. He has to make it look good all the time, because much of his followers would like nothing better than to annihilate Iran, thinking it's necessary thing to do because of the way they look at the theology. So it's a mess all the way around. There's not a unified field even behind Donald J. Trump. This is what the guy's dealing with. But, judging freedom and the gray zone and all the people like, no, he's owned and this and that. I mean, then why would the prime minister have to constantly travel to Washington? And here he goes again. Why would they be waiting around? There's a whole armada there. It is troubling. There's the largest amount of C-17s, those huge planes, since Iraqi freedom hanging around. But he's got to put on this show. And it's not all that.
It's not just a show.
Yeah,
it's not just a show. I guarantee you. In fact, I don't have to guarantee, because I know it was in the news a few weeks ago, that as soon as all of the assets were in place, they started running air defensive drills, folks, meaning special warfare systems on the ships, on the planes, aimed at shooting down missiles and drones and all of the rest of that. So it's not just there for show. The president is there to make sure that the Israelis do not do this, whatever this horrible thing is that they are planning to do. And so, folks, in the meantime, those of you who have made it part of your daily routine to nag and to rag on the president, just shut up. Shut up. You sound like these people right after 9/11 who tuned in to Pamela Geller and to Richard Pipes and all the rest of these horrible Jews who were selling to the Christian population that Islam is this and Ahab the Arab's going to come and get you. And it was all just a big lie, folks. It was a big lie. And, you know, like we said on the last program, at some point, not a second too soon, folks, we're going to have to take that eraser to our brains, and we're going to have to start removing that tattoo that says property of Judea, okay? Everything, there is nothing that the Jews put into our thought processes that are geared towards our benefit. It's all poisonous in nature. It's all part of their plans of destroying us, okay? And you have to factor this in. Now, a lot of you out there listening are saying to yourselves, well, of course, we know that. Well, no, you don't know that, not if you're out there spreading disinformation about whatever, okay? You have to always, you know, it's like walking through a minefield, you know? You have to study that ground before you put your foot down, because if you do step on that mine, you've got nobody to blame for it but yourself. And likewise in this war of Gentile liberation, in freeing ourselves from the reign of terror that the Jews have had over us since they crawled out of the earth 3,000 years ago, okay, we can't. We have to pull that IV out of our arm, folks, and not allow their poison to affect our thinking anymore. Okay? That's the bottom line. Stas, we are at just about, yeah, we're an hour into the program. I think that we pretty much covered it, unless there's something else you want to add to it.
No, just anybody listen, remember the Armada is there because last time when Trump was trying to make peace, the Israelis went around him and they bombed Iran. So he's got to take this step too. So stay with the president. Everybody pray that there's not a nuclear war by tomorrow. Every day is a miracle now.
Yes.
And if people looked at these things a little more with centrality, with partiality, and not so much emotion, then they would know how close we are to completely getting blown up, how serious this is, and what the president is trying to do. I hope every second counts that we can stay out of this. I do believe in my heart that you know, the back channel Iran, those people don't want a war. I believe that Trump and the good guys that are with him don't want a war. But we got to look at that. There's an awful lot of people that want it.
Maybe more want it than don't.
I don't know. I hate to say it. But
yeah, well, and then you have a lot of people, Stas, who just haven't learned the lessons of 9/11. Okay, you know, they're basically just it's just a different narrative, but it's all cut from the same cloth. And you know, they haven't. I received an email from one of the listeners a few days ago, and he said, "What is it going to take for the American people to realize the nature of the seek and destroy mission that is being waged against them? You know, for us to you know, step in and save something of our country." And I quoted something that Jesus said when he was asked during his time. His followers said, "What's it going to be like when this
this terrible day of evil arrives. And Jesus said, just as it was in the days that were before the flood, everyone was eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, and they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. Now, folks, however you come down on the story of Noah's Ark and the flood, whatever, there are several layers of meaning attached to this. It could be the flood of evil, can be the flood of lies, the flood of disinformation, okay? And you can see how people are just going about their lives as this flood of disinformation has just taken them away, and they don't even know it. And it's our job to fix that, folks. It's our job as best as we can to fix this, to save those who are willing to listen. And honestly, folks, you know, Stas and I and the handful of people that help out with this little endeavor here, we don't do this with any great hope. You know, we just do what we can, and we assume that not many people are going to climb upon that ark, Markey's Ark, we'll call it, the Ark of Mark, the Ugly Truth Ark. But that's okay. You know, this is evolution at its finest, because if this is the only way to start over again with people whose brains have not been tattooed with that horribly ugly statement, property of Judea, on it, then if this is the way that it has to be, then this is the way it has to be. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. We want to thank our good friend Stas for, as usual, an irreplaceable contribution to this discussion. As we say, folks, pray for a miracle. It's really the only thing that is going to save us, because if it all hinges upon huge numbers of Gentiles putting the pieces of this puzzle together and getting the math of it correct, if that's what our survival hinges on, then it's over. So that's it for today, folks. Until we meet again, God willing, as we say, pray for a miracle, because we really, really need it.